Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I'm David Beeves, and I'm moderating the session where we have to look forward into the future. What is the evolving landscape of ship finance? So we all need to have our crystal balls out tonight, I think, this afternoon, to find out where we're going. By way of information, I'm David Beeves. I have been doing ship finance for over 40 years, which is why I hobble onto the stage and am an old man. I started in 1981 in London, and back in those days, documentation was relatively unsophisticated. People talked of the loan agreement on the back of an envelope. Very simple. Dear Joe, you want to buy a ship? I'll lend you 70%. You come up with the difference. Pay me interest at this rate. Pay me repayments at that rate. Run your ship well. Don't do anything naughty, in which case I'll enforce my mortgage. Full stop. That was the end. But of course, things have moved on, and ship finance has evolved a lot since then. Back in 1981 in London, it was the very early days. And I remember Martin Watson and Alistair Farley were setting up a firm. It's so long ago. So, ship finance, the evolving landscape. Where are we today? Well, it is a pretty fractured landscape that we look upon. I saw a quote from Graham Porter of Tiger Group, who many of you might know. He said, "The world is breaking apart." I think that's what's causing all this chaos. We're on a very different trend. It's no longer collaboration, it's independent. Pull your resources and hold them yourself. We've seen a shift to alternative financing. The traditional ship finance banks, which I knew, some of them have left the market or retreated. Chinese, Japanese leasing companies have stepped in. We now, of course, have a focus on decarbonation, green financing, which has been touched on earlier this morning. The Poseidon principles, which we may get to when I talk to the panelists. Structures have changed. Introduction of flexible repayment structures, evolving loan-to-value ratios. All of these things are affecting ship finance. Regulatory changes are coming up. Basel 3 and Basel 4 will meet huge constraints, potentially, on ship finance banks and the loans that can be made. Market dynamics are alternative sources. We've got interest rates higher. And then if that's not enough, we've got Ukraine, we've got the Middle East, we've got Houthis in the Gulf, and we've got Donald Trump coming in as president in January next year. So everything is in a state of flux. And we're very lucky today because we've got here representatives, I think, from each of the key sectors. We've got Ms. He Fang from CSSC, a lessor. I think you will all know of CSSE and their prominence in the leasing market at the moment. In terms of what we might call traditional financing, we have Mr. T.C. Wong, who comes from Singapore, and he's the current Senior Vice President of DNB Asia. And DNB Asia, I think we all know DNB as being a very large ship financing bank. And finally, representing the private equity, if we might say, we have Mr. Martin Huger. He's a ship finance professional. He started at Commerzbank. He's been at Alshenbulk, and he's with Mirbone Capital Solutions at the moment, which is a diversified ship finance platform that provides tailor-made financing solutions to shipping companies around the world. So we couldn't hope to have three better representatives of the banking, leasing, private investment, equity industry, who can address this vexing problem of the evolving landscape of ship finance. So I'm going to start off with a very, very simple question. With a lot of owners being cash rich at the moment for various reasons, COVID and wars, what are your views on the ship finance-led landscape over the next 5 years? And perhaps we start with Ms. Herb.
Thank you, David. Thank you for campaigning to give this opportunity for me to share the ideas here. As we all see this, as David mentioned, the equities are quite the cash rich of all these shipping markets being very hot. For the more finance are going back to the banks, or the leasing houses, of course, play another role. But for me, I think the bank finance and the leasing finance are quite two important arms, let me say like this. Before 2008, we see all these finance are major done by the banks, you know, after 2008, and especially in the past 10 years, the leasing houses actually played a very important finance role in the industry for the shipping part. So always banks and leasing houses, I think this is a partnership, like we are cooperating each other, and we are also, of course, these days maybe some competition. But for these two arms to support the finance of the industry, one arm, of course, is a bit weak. I think two arms to support the industry will be a greater finance solution for the industry. And we always we are also seeing from the current situation, like we also heard from the last two panels about the new energies, about the new technologies. So this world today is a quite innovative world, and we are facing and we will face many new solutions to go into a new world, like we say. So even nowadays, we see cash rich in the hands, but how much money we really need, how much fund we really need to make this innovative world to become true and to finally reach our target in the future. This, I think, will be done, needed to, for all the arms to stand up, to support the whole industry to do this. So in this way, I think this is it's very important for today's financiers to really understand what we are financing, at what we financed. So it's very important for us to more work into the technology side and to work together even closer than before with owners, shipping companies, the class, even shipyards, to know the world and to know what we exactly finance.
Thank you. I've always said, actually, that the ship finance banker is a very, very special person, actually. He has to first and foremost be a banker, and then he has to learn the vagaries and the ups and the downs. And boy, oh, there are some ups and downs of the ship finance market. He's got to know shipping inside out. And I believe that ship finance specialists are essential, because I remember when bondholders came into the market, they didn't really know shipping. And if there was a downturn, they'd just call in their bonds. You need a relationship with your lenders. TC, can we have your view, please?
Sure. Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me. Well, I think a lot of discussion this morning has been on the transition. So I think that will continue definitely to be an important part, not only for the next 5 years, probably for the next 25 years. And also over the past few years, we do see a lot of liquidity, as you mentioned, both on the lender side and also on the borrower side. So that actually consequently actually reduced borrowing margins. So of course, then ship owners get to enjoy that. So for us, being what we would call a full-service bank, we not only rely on our lending capabilities, We also have been increasing our services on other parts of our services, other parts of our business. So that definitely includes M&A advisory. It includes equity services, both on the public and the private side. And for us, DNB, we are 35% Norwegian government-owned bank. We are AA rated. So we actually, for many of our clients in shipping, we have more deposits than lending. So that is also a big part of service that we provide.
Thank you, TC. Lease financing has come to the fore over the last few years, but we get straws in the wind that traditional debt financing may be on the way back in a limited form. Do you have any view about that?
Yeah, well, being a European bank, I think Basel IV, which we might get into more discussion later, could be a short-term impact. I would say many European banks might be suffering from increased capital costs in the short term because EU is bent on introducing this earlier than the rest of the world. So in terms of traditional shipping banks, as far as European banks go, it might not be the case in the short term. For DNB, though, our Norwegian regulator had been quite strict with us capital-wise. So in a way, we are looking forward to a more level playing field, at least within Europe. So for us, we probably will not be as impacted. But as I say, we probably will focus on the broad spectrum of our product offerings.
Thank you, Martin.
Yeah. I'm not as long in the industry as you are. I only started in the mid-90s.
A youth.
But one of the first questions I asked at that time to my bosses, why don't you try to be bigger? Commerce Bank at that time was a fairly small bank in shipping. And he said, you know, we are four guys here, and if the market doesn't make sense for us to do business, we just don't do business. And the guys at Chase, they have to do business every year. They have so many people. They need to do business whether it makes sense or not. And then a couple of years later, I was a bit older, people talked to me on higher levels. There were two German banks who both ceased to exist. The one board member said, oh, margins are lousy, so we're gonna go for the lousy margins, but we double our business. That bank stopped to exist. The other bank took a different approach. It said, markets are lousy. We take higher risks. We want the risk that is slightly more aggressive so that we can continue to make money. Also, that bank, a little bit later, exited shipping. So what I hope for the banks and all of us around is that we have the discipline to only finance projects that are sense-making and let our people kill flies if there's nothing else to do, rather than do nonsense, increase the risk, lower the price, and do stupid transactions that no one gets any benefit out of.
Thank you. A follow-up on this. Given that there is considerable liquidity in the finance market and that owners have been generating significant cash, are you seeing any creative financing or product offerings coming up out of the shipping industry? Are the lenders becoming more creative? As we start with you, Martin.
Well, I don't really see a lot of innovation in shipping over the last 20 years. At the end of the day, we are providing money to people to buy a vessel, to build a vessel, and we look at how the money is coming back. We hope it comes back in full and the owner makes some money on the way. We call it sometimes green finance, which then has some extra covenants and a slightly lower margin. We call it lease, only to go back to the banks and refinance the leases with the banks on a senior level. So I haven't seen much real innovation in shipping, in ship finance.
TC?
Well, I guess the best innovation that ship owners appreciate would be a lower margin. Mm-hmm. But I guess Yeah, well, like Martin mentioned, there are, for example, sustainability linked loans are one feature that is quite common amongst loans nowadays. There has been green loans, green bonds. These are a bit more tailor-made to the use of proceeds, where the use of proceeds has to go directly towards zero emissions, basically, solutions, which is, as we know, not readily available in shipping. So for DNB, we recently announced what we call the Transition Financing Framework, which induces the ship owner towards using the proceeds towards making the transition. So while it might not equate to necessarily a big change in the margin, but it is a way to signal the way banks would want to contribute towards this transition journey.
Yes, sir.
Regarding to this, and I think then this is some difference from the leasing houses comparing the funds and also the banks. So for the leasing houses, actually there's might a bit innovative things, creative methods to for the finance. Yes, we besides of the traditional finance part to give margin, and we also sometimes can join the equity part to finally make the project done. So I think this is the advantage of the leasing houses these days to just a bit different than the traditional finance.
So more flexibility.
More flexibility and different solutions.
Yes. Are lenders looking more favorably at any particular area of shipping for investment now moving forward into the future? Ms. Ho?
Yeah, for this part, then it is always the ship types. We, as a finance, we will not put all the eggs into a basket. But so we go more for the, I think, the green parts.
You see?
Yeah, well, from the ESG point of view, we do not actually exclude any type of vessels. We believe there has a lot to be gained from making existing ships more efficient rather than scrapping it and making a new one. There's obvious benefits to that. That being said, I think we are a little bit cautious on the container vessel side. We think the order book is quite large. It's true that the liners are have extremely strong balance sheet now, so perhaps it's not a concern now. But if we were to do it, we probably go a bit more conservative on the structure in terms of, say, loan to value, and also the repayment profile. Otherwise, we don't really have a preference from the lending point of view in terms of other sectors.
Martin.
We're fairly flexible. We want to understand what the guy wants to do with the vessel. And generally, we have a little bit of a negative view on the container market for the near time because the one-off disruptions that we've seen with Red Sea and the war, they should hopefully be gone at some stage. And then the oversupply we have at the moment will come to light. But even if, in a container market, if someone comes with a project and has an idea why he wants to do that, and it makes sense, then we will do that. So we look very individually at why is someone investing in this vessel? His equity, his first risk, and does it make sense for us to join him?
Were any of you involved in Japanese operation leases, JOLCOs for ships?
Well, if a Japanese operator wants to have a vessel financed, we are not the guys. We are way too expensive for him. But we turn to the Japanese who have investment needs to refinance us.
Do you see? JOLCOs?
We are not so experienced in JOLCOs, given that we do not have a branch in Japan. But we work with the Japanese, providing perhaps advisory. But we are not so active with JOLCOs.
We actually don't have any experience there.
We must move on, I think, to the big subject that sort of hangs over shipping at the moment, which is decarbonization and the Poseidon principles. I read somewhere that of the total new order book at the moment, nearly 50% are alternative fuel vessels. So assuming the Poseidon principles continue to be adopted by more lending institutions, do you see lenders focusing on more environmentally friendly new builds in the future?
Actually, for our company, we pay this very much attention on all this environmental friendly and also the green energy and use of the vessels to be adopted in the future. So for this part of the business, actually, these days conquers quite a large percentage of our business.
GC?
We are actually one of the pioneer signatories of Poseidon Principle. And it was done, I guess, 7-8 years now ago.
Just leaping in there, TC. It was set up in 2019. DNB was one of the founding fathers of Poseidon. There are now 70% of banks signed up to it.
Sorry. Yeah, well, when I say 7-8 years, it was when it was started in terms of the inception. Yep. So since then, and that was done when, you know, the banks were trying to figure out how to be part of this decarbonization journey. Nothing was, IMO has not set the net zero target yet. And one of the first key initiatives was to collect data so that the banks understand what we are financing in terms of emissions. And without data, of course, then we cannot plot the trajectory. Since then, IMO has set the net zero target for 2050, and the Poseidon Principles is aligned to IMO for that. But I think the bigger issue would then be what kind of trajectory should the banks and basically the industry follow. It is one thing to just set a straight line down to zero, and if you want to, you know, meet that target, I mean, the easiest thing is to not finance any ships. Which, of course, is not practical. And as per any technology, it needs time to evolve and to mature and to be adapted by the masses. And therefore, DNB, we believe that, you know, we should do a more bottoms-up approach to see what's possible and then to set both an ambitious and a practical trajectory, which is probably going to look more like a curve because you're going to get more of your reduction, perhaps in the later years. So I think that is the key challenge for the industry, really, and then for Poseidon Principles to support this initiative.
Let me tackle that in two parts. First, I think as a finance institution, you should finance vessels that have a future and that have a technology that works, and that have a remaining lifetime that is at least sufficient commercial and technical lifetime to repay your finance. So, yes, it makes sense to change propulsion, but you need to get it right. And if you have a small company with three vessels and you get it wrong, it's fairly bad. If you are a company like MSC with 600, 800 vessels and two have the wrong propulsion, who cares? Doesn't really matter. So I think the innovation has to come from the bigger companies who can afford to be wrong and who have the resources to correct mistakes and for whom it's not disastrous. So that's the first part, then Poseidon Principles,
right.
Where, if I may, I'd like to be a bit contrarian. I have yet to meet a banker who actually understands the technical part of shipping so well that he is better than a classification society. The classification society has given the task to decarbonize and to improve efficiency of vessels. I don't think it's the job of banks to second-guess what the technicians and the classification societies are doing, and to impose some kind of principles that will, at the end of the day, just create bureaucracy for everyone.
I think there's a general feeling, and I hope in the industry, that 2030 is going to slip a little bit, and that therefore we might have a little bit more time on this subject. Any views on that?
Yeah, I think actually for the next 5 years, it is quite interesting to see how all these things need to go, to which direction, to really, like we are talking about the new energies, ammonia, methanol. So which part will be the right or everybody? Everyone's here. So it's quite interesting to see what will be the right direction to go, or finally what the world will be.
See?
Yeah, I think I will have to agree. But it's, as discussed this morning at length, the other parts of the supply chain would have to play their part. Because as you mentioned, most of the new buildings are new alternative fuel ready. But of course, it doesn't mean that they have the ability or the means to both purchase and also afford such alternative fuels. So the rest of the supply chain will have to play their part. And I think if it slips, it's not the fault, in my opinion, of the shipping industry.
Well,
agree with that.
I mean, I've seen some very, very radical proposals that may be out there in the future, where banks will be forced to link the amount they lend to the carbon emission of the vessel concerned. Now, at the moment, it's only the vessel's emissions which are falling prey to this, but some are even talking about the cargoes on the vessels. I mean, things could reach ridiculous extents.
Do you think it's really the bank's job?
I do not.
I think if there is money out there who says, We are money. We want to have a lower return if we make the world a better place. There will be demand for that. But if the margin is just very small, I'm not sure there's really that much green money out there that is willing to forgive return for some goody benefit that you don't see on your balance sheet.
Actually, money should also be healthy.
Yes. Well, I'm sure one person agrees with you, and I'm going to raise his name next. Do you think the election of Donald Trump as the next U.S. president is going to affect the shipping industry, and in particular China?
So. I think it's hard to do, but the good thing is at least we have already had 4 years experience.
Yeah, well, given that this is the second time, the world is probably a little bit more prepared. But both both parties in the U.S. seems to be quite aligned in terms of at least the attitude towards China and the policy probably. What may change is the trade patterns that where manufacturing might again the weight of it might be out of China. Given that there is a likelihood of further increases in the tariffs. So there might be some changes in, for example, Trans-Pacific route might reduce, and then the North-South capacity might have to increase. But I don't think it would be a radical change, per se.
Well, I mean, one of the... he's talking of introducing 40% tariffs on goods from China. That would severely affect the liner industry because the U.S. is such a big market, and the tariffs that he's suggesting will affect shipping particularly badly. Surely, I mean, and of course, grain is an important issue. Last trade war that Trump had with China, there were 40% tariffs on U.S. grain into China. So, I think that adds to your point that trade patterns may shift, correct?
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
Last time we saw, as I say, that Brazil became very important to China in terms of shipments. So we live and learn. Whatever we can say about Mr. Trump, the next few years are going to be very interesting.
it's going to be interesting and it's going to be loud. And probably the noise is going to be good for shipping in the short term, at least. And the tariffs are going to be bad long term.
Shipping diversity seems to do quite well during bad times.
Yeah.
So maybe we're all in for a good time. Well, look, thank you very much for sharing your views on the evolving future of ship finance. That's all I've got to say. Thank you for all listening so patiently. That's the end of our session. Thank you.
Thank you.